Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Let's face it, it's hard sometimes to break the truth to your parents. And ironically, it can be even harder when you're an adult trying to establish some boundaries. That's what Sung-woo discovered when his mother's culinary intrusions began to affect his marriage. Sung's essay is read by Kumail Nanjiani and Emily Gordon, the husband and wife team behind the movie The Big Sick. It's just been nominated for an Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay. Here they are, reading Overfed on a Mother's Affection.
My mother held out a Tupperware container of chicken thighs and drumsticks, roasted with kimchi, bell peppers, onions, and scallions. It's a great dish. One of my favorites. No, I said. My mother and I don't fight often nowadays because I'm 41 and she's 72 and we lead separate lives. I see her once every 2 weeks. She makes me lunch. We shop at Costco. She makes me dinner. Then she sends me off with grocery bags full of her cooking. We've been on this schedule for the last 8 years since my father passed away. But on this evening, near the end of my visit to her senior apartment, I could tell we were going to argue. Just take it, she said. I can't. It's just one more. There was an edge to her voice. Why are you being difficult? The heat trapped inside the container had fogged up the clear lid, and the condensation had gathered into droplets like tears. It was just one more container, small as a cigar box, ready for me to take home. To feed me, both in person and remotely, gives my mother pleasure and purpose. She works hard on the day I visit. I know because she has told me with great pride. She rises at 6 and washes the rice until the water runs clear. There's tofu to slice and dredge into an egg and flour mixture, spinach to quick boil and marinate with soy sauce and sesame seed oil. She rolls logs of Korean sushi with her bamboo mat. In a pan, she browns chicken thighs and drumsticks. She plans for lunch, cold buckwheat noodles with beef slices and diced cucumber in a pickled daikon broth. For dinner, rice cake medallions and oxtail soup. In all my years, I haven't gone hungry for long. Even in South Korea, where she took care of my two older sisters and me by herself because my father was working in the United States, we never skimped on our meals. Back then, my mother's chief mission was to feed us. Her kitchen was her workplace, and we children were her customers. Her cooking has always been her currency. Even now, when she needs a favor from one of her friends, she invites them over and plies them with dumplings before making her request. My mother may not wear her emotions on her sleeves, but that's only because her sleeves are rolled up and her emotions are lying in the bottom of a pot. My rejection of her kimchi chicken is a rejection of what she does, who she is. I know this, but I have to push back because... there's another woman in my life who wants to cook for me. My wife and I have been married for 5 years. Dawn has been a food critic and a restaurant critic. She bakes a 16-layer cake and marshmallow chocolate brownies that friends describe years later with fevered fairy tale reverie. Having a bite of our slow cooked pot roast with potatoes and carrots is like getting a hug from your best friend. If Dawn were more confrontational and less patient, she would have informed my mother long ago that it was no longer her job to make meals for me. But that is not her style. And were I a more perceptive husband, I would have figured out that our refrigerator, perpetually jammed with my mother's food, was a source of consternation for Don. The wife and her mother-in-law at odds, and the husband caught in between. It's as cliched as a cliché can get, a sitcom brought to life. Except reality is more complicated than a zinger and a laugh track. The night before my last visit to my mother's, when Don heard me complaining yet again about how my mother's dishes were still left over, her capacious capacity for tolerance finally ran out.
You could ask her to make less.
I have, but she just sneaks in more when I'm not looking.
But have you really asked?
Of course I have. What, you think I want to bring back all this food I can't eat? We were on the verge of an argument, and then we went over the edge into the angry abyss. After a few slammed doors and a day of uneasy silence, we had vented enough to sit down and dissect the path of this particular quarrel. The post-game replay of an argument is tricky business because tempers can flare as we backtrack to the trigger point, but we almost always find it helpful.
We eat separate meals. You eat your mom's food, and I eat what I cook.
Once I'm done with her food, I eat what you make. But we both knew the problem was that with so much food coming from my mother, I hardly got a chance to eat my wife's cooking. It had become worse lately, with my mother piling on the food, the grocery bags stretching to their limit.
It feels like a disconnection, doesn't it, to you?
The more I thought about it, the more I knew she was right. Having dinner together means more than just eating at the same time, at the same table. The food matters. Dawn wanted to bring us closer together as a couple by having us share in what we ate. And I felt like a dope for not realizing this sooner. We talked about ways we could stem the tide of my mother's cooking into our household. I suggested something that had worked in the past. That I lie and tell my mother I'd thrown away her food because it had spoiled. In the Supreme Court of my mother's mind, wasting food is a crime worthy of capital punishment. As a 9-year-old girl at the outset of the Korean War, scrounging for scraps while tanks rolled by and fighter planes roared above, she has a reverence for food that borders on fanaticism.
I suppose.
Which really meant...
no.
You have a better idea?
Maybe you can tell her that you're a man, you're my husband, and your wife wants to cook for you.
I sighed. Everything Dawn said was true, but did I really have to say it to my mother? That night, I dreamed of my father, something that doesn't happen often. We didn't have a close relationship, so he doesn't feature prominently in my conscious mind, but I pay attention when he makes a showing. I can't remember where the dream took place, but there he was, sitting in an armchair, looking content and carefree. I was so disappointed in him for some reason, but I couldn't find the words to express my displeasure. I woke up frustrated. Just as I brushed my teeth and washed my face, I let my inner Freud do his thing. In Korea, while my father was away for 7 years, I was the man in my mother's life. When our family reunited in 1981 in America, I could play just the part of the son. But when my father died, I once again assumed the dual role of the son and my mother's man. Maybe it was time for my mother and me to grow up. I pushed the container of chicken back toward my mother. I breathed in, breathed out. I clasped my hands together as if in prayer. "Dawn likes to cook too, Mom," I told her. "And I love what she makes. Isn't it right for the husband to be eating his wife's food?" My mother said nothing. She picked up the container and placed it in her refrigerator. My mother wants so little from me. She wants to give, not even take. And this was how I treated her. I wanted to retract what I said. I almost did. But when she turned around, it wasn't heartbreak I saw. Instead, I saw a woman who was ready to do business, to negotiate the terms of a new contract. "Okay," she said. that makes sense. But you'll still take a few dishes, right? Let's come up with a number. What keeps my mother going in the sunset years is doing what she does best, which is to cook for herself, friends, my sisters, and me. We agreed to whittle the takeaway down from around 10 containers to exactly 4. But this week, when I returned from my visit, I noticed a 5th container. She's like a master reverse thief, I told Dawn. I even tied the bag closed, but she stuffed it in there somehow. My wife shrugged.
At least there isn't too much of it.
Underneath the circular lid of the 5th container were steamed shrimp, 6 of them, finger-sized, peeled, and deveined. I held one up, a white and pink crescent that resembled either a smile or a frown, depending on how you looked at it.
Kumail Nanjiani and Emily Gordon, reading Sung Woo's essay, Overfed on a Mother's Affection. And here's why they chose it.
I think maybe we both really liked this piece because it is quite similar, I think, to maybe your upbringing a little bit, Kumail. Your mom is an absolutely fantastic cook. The only difference is that I am not a fantastic cook. So I'm not vying for that title so much.
You've never made a 16-layer cake.
Oh, not even 2-layer. I've made a 1-layer cake.
Yeah, and for both our families, you know, food is really important, and it's a big way that both our families show love. So it's just something that really we connected with.
Yeah, both the Southern people and the Pakistani people like to sit around and eat a lot.
Yeah, food is a big way that our families connect.
Yeah. But instead, I think if we were writing this essay, it would be both of us enjoying your mom's cooking rather than me trying to cook for you.
Yeah. In real life, you would be like, we didn't get enough Tupperware containers.
Yes.
Can we get more?
Can you ask her to make more, please?
Yes.
Kumail Nanjiani and Emily Gordon. They co-wrote the film The Big Sick. It's based on the true story of the illness that changed their relationship. And they received an Academy Award nomination for their original screenplay. Kumail also stars in the film. Now, is Sung's mother still sneaking containers into those bags? More after the break.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with The New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building. Finds an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to The New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
Sung Woo still visits his mother every 2 weeks, and that Costco trip, those lunches, and the many containers of food, it's all still happening.
They've expanded to 6 now. It was 4. 6 because my mother has convinced me that 2 of them are fruit, and that's not really food, according to her definition. So I have Dawn's support, but my mother still tends to be quite sneaky. What she's doing now is she's incrementally increasing her portions. So since there's a limit now in the number of containers, she's kind of putting more food into me.
Sung doesn't cook much himself. He says he used to in college, but he wasn't very good at it. And even though it's caused some problems in his marriage, he appreciates the way he and his mother are able to connect through her cooking.
We hardly talk at all outside of, like, what we're going to be eating or shopping for. That is the core of our relationship. It really hasn't gotten beyond that, but I'm okay with that. And I think she is too. It's very simple this way, very almost primal, but it works for us.
Sung feels deep empathy for his mother. He says she never had it easy.
My father had this successful business, import-export business in Korea, and then the gas crisis hit, and then he lost everything. And, of course, you know, we all lost everything, and then he had to leave. And my mother had to raise three kids by herself for about 7 years. And then when we came here, she's 40 years old, had to learn how to drive a car, that never spoke a word of English. So she had to learn all of that.
Sung knows that there are some people who hear this story and wonder, what's the problem with having two women who want to cook for him?
You know, boo-hoo me, really. But the fact is, I have to live with one of these women, like, all the time. And then the other one I see every so often, but she's my mother. You know, I want to keep everyone as happy as possible, and me too. So, you know, on the grand scheme of things, there are much worse problems, and I fully recognize that. But this is still like a problem, so I'm glad we have found some peace.
Sung Woo, he's a writer. He lives in New Jersey with his wife, Dawn. After the break, what Modern Love editor Daniel Jones thought of the essay.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments. Ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building. Finds an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
Dan Jones says that to him, this piece is about how we accept love and how we express it.
It had such a sweet sense of humor, this piece, where when he finally confronts his mother and says, I can't, I have a wife now, and she wants me to eat her food, and I can't be taking this much food back. And instead of feeling very stung over that rejection, the mother turns around ready for negotiation, and she's like, okay, well, how about 4 containers instead of 10? And then she slips in a 5th container on the next visit. And just those ways of like, okay, how much of you can I hang on to? I just thought that was so poignant.
Next week, Uma Thurman. She tells the story of an accident that changed a family.
He told me that by the time he saw both boys in the road, he was already too close. If he swerved onto the sidewalk, he would hit Alex. If he didn't, he would hit Jonathan. All I know is there were two boys in front of me, he said. I had to decide in that very moment, and it was so fast. I chose not to hit your brother that day. What kind of choice is that?
Modern Love is a production of the New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Perotti, Amory Sievertson, and Caitlin O'Keefe. Additional sound design by Matt Reed. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.